I want to thank you for being here this morning, and for those who are visiting with us, we at the Grissom Road Congregation appreciate very much your presence. We are here today to worship God and to learn about His Word, about His will for us. And to that end, I would encourage you to follow with me and to study, to make sure that the things I teach fall in line with God's Word. You have a responsibility to know the truth. And so study and make sure your faith is based on God's Word. I think most of us would agree that we are blessed in so many ways to live in this country. This country provides us with opportunities that you cannot find any other place. People want to come to this country. People want to be a part of the American dream. You hear a lot of debate, discussion about whether the American dream is still alive, and I believe it is. And I believe that, at least in part, the dream that we have in this country was founded on some biblical principles. I am one who believes that our founding fathers, for the most part, believed in God, and they set out to establish laws, a constitution, a bill of rights, that in some way reflected their belief in God. I do not hold the position that we are a Christian country. I do not believe that we've ever been a Christian country. But I do believe, again, that many of our founding fathers had in mind a belief, a faith in God, and some of these helped to guide them as they established law. We are blessed in this country. But can you imagine that some 15 months out, we are already having debates about the next president of this country? It seems like it is continual, does it not? We no sooner get through with one election cycle that we almost immediately begin another. And again, we are blessed because we have at least a voice in who will be elected. I know sometimes we feel like we don't, but we have a voice. We are able to cast our vote. We are able to make our wishes known, and that's a good thing. I also know that there will be many churches, many religious organizations that will take a political stand. In fact, they will perhaps even have candidates in their assembly and give them a time to speak, maybe even on Sunday, maybe even in connection with a worship service. That will take place. This morning, I'm going to talk about politics and the Christian. And I made that known to a few people, and when I did, their eyebrows raised a little bit, because they know that when you talk about politics and Christianity, even by themselves, can be very volatile. But you put the two together, and it almost seems like you are destined to have some kind of an explosion take place. But we're going to talk about politics and the Christian. And this will be part one of our discussion. Let me begin by simply defining some terms, if you will. From the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language, the word politics: the art or science of government or governing, especially the governing of a political entity, such as a nation, and the administration and control of its internal and external affairs, political science. Number 2A, the activities or affairs engaged in by a government, politician, or political party. B, the methods or tactics involved in managing a state or government. So we see from this definition that the idea of politics has to do with governing something. We're talking about a line of authority. We're talking about someone who has the right to impose their will on others. It may be in a national sense. It may be talking about a nation. But it could also be talking about something smaller than that. And it again involves the idea of governing. And we recognize that governing takes place in many spheres, in many places. Number four, intrigue or maneuvering within a political unit or a group in order to gain control or power. Number six, the often internally conflicting interrelationships among people in a society. And so from these definitions, we understand that the idea of politics may be just someone trying to get an advantage or control or power over another person or over an entity, if you will. And quite often, there is conflict, there is disagreement. That's the idea of politics. But that's not all. Let's look at the word politician. Again, from the American Heritage Dictionary of the English Language. Noun. One who is actively involved or skilled in politics. Now, we defined politics, didn't we? Especially one who holds a political office. Number two, one who deceives or outmaneuvers others for personal gain. Now, again, we're talking about the definition of politician, right? Webster's New World College Dictionary, 4th edition, defines the word politician as a person actively engaged in politics, especially party politics, professionally or otherwise, often a person holding or seeking political office, frequently used in a derogatory sense, with implications of seeking personal or partisan gain, scheming, opportunism, etc. So when we talk about a politician, we're talking about, again, someone who's involved in politics some way, and quite often we associate that with some kind of a governing body. It may be national, it may be statewide, it may be local. But that's not the only way that these words are used. And quite often when we think about a politician, we're thinking about someone, according to definition, who may be self-serving. And someone who may not always be honest and upright and forthright by definition. Let me say that the Lord's church, the body of Christ, the local body of Christ, has no business in politics. And the Lord's church, the body of Christ, should not be political. However, the Bible is clear that as a child of God, we are political. And we do have to take an interest in those things, as we shall see as we go through this study. Let's look at politics in biblical times. And I would have to say that not much is known in early civilizations, about early civilizations. In fact, if you look in the book of Genesis chapter 1 through chapter 9, there's just not much there about the idea of nation or politics or governing. Now, I think we can infer by what is said in those chapters that the head of the household, the patriarch, was the one who had control. But if we look in chapter 9 and verse 19, these three were the sons of Noah, and from these the people of the whole earth were dispersed. And so we've covered several hundred years from the creation to the time of the flood and Noah. And a summation is given here in verse 19 as the flood has ended, they're now on dry land. And the world as we know it will begin. From these, the sons of Noah, the people of the whole earth were dispersed. There is a clear mention, I believe, of a political structure. Again, when we talk about politics, what do we mean? Well, we're talking about a governing body. We're talking about someone or some entity with power and authority to rule. In Genesis chapter 10 and verse 5, from these, the coastlands people spread in their lands, each with his own language, by their clans in their nations. Talking about the descendants of Japheth, one of the sons of Noah. In verse 8, Cush fathered Nimrod. He was the first on earth to be a mighty man. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. The beginning of his kingdom was Babel. And then if you look in verse 20 of the same chapter, these are the sons of Ham. And so Nimrod was a descendant of Ham. These are the sons of Ham by their clans, their languages, their lands, and their nations. And then if you look in Genesis chapter 10, verse 31 and 32, you read there about the descendants of Shem. And again, the same kind of a statement is made about them with regard to their clans and their nations. And so I believe here that what we see from divine revelation is the idea that nations are going to be built, that from these three and the descendants, you're going to find the peoples of the world. And that is exactly what takes place. We can also look at politics in Abraham's time. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 1 and verse 2, God told Abraham, "Go from your country. I will make of you a great nation." And so clearly, by the time of Abraham, the idea of nationality, the idea of nation, the idea of governance, the idea of politics is clear. And you look in verse 20 of Genesis chapter 12, and we read there about Pharaoh, and he was the king of Egypt, a nation, and again, a political scheme, a political format, if you will, in the form of a king. And then if you look in Genesis chapter 14, verse 1 through verse 16, you know there the battle of kings and Abraham's rescue of Lot. These were generally thought to be city kings. At this time, it seems that, for the most part, nations, even though people of one nationality, if you will, existed, that for the most part, governance was done on a more local basis. And so we read about city kings. In fact, in verse 18 through verse 20, we read about Melchizedek, who was both high priest and king of Salem. But again, what we're finding is that there are politics involved. Again, remember the definition of that word, politics. And I would suggest to you that in politics, you have divine control, but you have human volition. In other words, God is the one, as read a few moments ago by Jimmy, in the book of Romans chapter 13, God is the one who ordained and established government. And so there is some divine control in all of this, but that never takes away from our power to choose. Let's look at an example. Let's look at some events that fulfilled divine will and promises, but retained man's control in his own life. In the book of Genesis chapter 37, verse 3 through verse 11, you have family politics. And yes, the word politics can be used in the family and the way the family is run. You know the story. You have here the story of Joseph. And we are told that he had a favorite child. He had a favorite child. We read in verse 3. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a robe of many colors. Joseph was the favorite son of Jacob. And Joseph had a couple of dreams. And he told his brothers and his father these dreams. And the dreams had Joseph in a position of authority. And it angered his brothers, as you can imagine. In verse 10, but when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you?" And his brothers were jealous of him. No wonder. But his father kept the saying in mind. We see here politics playing out in the family. Let me ask you something. Have you ever had politics play out in your family? Between husband and wife? Between parents and children? Have you ever had children try to play you against your husband or your wife? Politics taking place. In verse 28, the brothers get rid of their problem. They sell him. They sell Joseph. And Joseph ends up in the house of Potiphar in Genesis chapter 39. And because God is with them, and all that Joseph does is successful, soon he is raised by Potiphar to be the head of the household, to run the business, if you will. And Potiphar's wife lusted after Joseph. And you see in that chapter politics taking place. And of course, we know that Joseph was sent to prison because Potiphar's wife made accusations against him. While in prison, again, Joseph advanced. He was blessed by God. He was put in charge of the other prisoners. And in chapter 40, we read about the chief cupbearer and the baker. The chief cupbearer is restored. They both have dreams. They didn't understand the dreams. Joseph told them the interpretation. And he told the chief cupbearer, "You're going to be restored." But the chief baker, he said, you're going to be hanged. You're going to be put to death." And both events took place. And Joseph told the chief cupbearer, "Remember me when you are restored." Well, for 2 years he didn't. And then Pharaoh had a dream. And so we read in the book of Genesis chapter 41 about Pharaoh's dream. How there was going to come a great famine after 7 years of plenty. There would be 7 years of famine and desolation. Joseph was able to interpret this dream, of course, through the power of God. And Joseph was elevated in position, second only to Pharaoh, in the great nation of Egypt. And so we see politics taking place, do we not? And we see in all of this God's control. Turn over to the book of Genesis chapter 45, verse 4. So Joseph said to his brothers, "Come near to me, please, And they came near and he said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you for a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. And so the point that Joseph makes is, God was in control. God worked through all of this. He worked through the family politics, the jealousy of the brothers. He worked through it when Potiphar bought him and then sent him to prison. God was working in all of this as the chief cupbearer and chief baker had their dreams. And he was working through this when Pharaoh had his dream. And now Joseph is second only to Pharaoh. But please understand that as all of this was taking place, the players retained their control of their lives, of their decisions, of their choices. In fact, God used man's evil for good. You see, clearly, Jacob didn't know what was going on. The brothers didn't know what was going on. Joseph did not know what was going on. But at the end, this is what we read in verse 15. This is after Jacob had died and he was buried, and now they were back, and the brothers, they were worried. In verse 15, it may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil we did to him. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin, because they did evil to you. You see politics still playing out, don't you? And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. This wasn't the first time they bowed down. They bowed down earlier, if you recall. His dreams came true. But Joseph said to them in verse 19, do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. And so God was able to take the evil they intended, the evil intended by Potiphar's wife. He was able to take all of that and make it to the good of his purpose, of his cause, and for his people. And yet we read about all of this political maneuvering taking place. I want us to understand, as read earlier, in the book of Romans chapter 13, verse 1 through verse 7, God ordains government. Politics is a part of government. God ordained government. And again, there is divine control, but human volition. God may specifically choose some leaders. He did that in the past. I know that because the Bible reveals it. I'm not sure that people then would have known it unless God revealed it in some way to a prophet. But certainly we understand that God chose some leaders. Turn to the book of Daniel chapter 2 and verse 20. This was in response to another dream, a dream that Nebuchadnezzar had. And none of the magicians, the astrologers, none of the wise men of his country could interpret the dream. But Daniel did, through the power of God. And of course, he gave God credit for that. But Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and season." Now listen, "He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him." There is no doubt that God is able to remove and is able to set up kings. In fact, in the very life of Daniel, we see that taking place a little bit later. In Daniel chapter 4 and verse 17, he had another dream. It was a dream that he was going to lose his kingdom. And Daniel warned him about that. In verse 17, "The sentence is by the decree of the watchers, the decision by the word of the holy ones, to the end that the living may know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will and sets over it the lowliest of men." Now again, all of this was done. Daniel was going to lose his kingdom for a period of time because of his pride. And all of this was done so that men may know that God is in control. God sets up and he removes. And he does it at his pleasure, at his discretion. And so, yes, God may specifically choose some leaders. And not only that, he may even choose evil leaders. Think about that for a moment. God will at times choose those who are evil. In Exodus 9, verse 14, "For this time I will send my plagues on you yourself and on your servants and your people, so that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth." Again, God is trying to show a pompous leader that he is in control. When someone of pride rises up, God says, "I'm going to show you in these examples that we've given. For by now I could have put out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, and you would have been cut off from the earth." God said, "I could have destroyed you if I wanted to by now. But for this reason I have raised you up." Did you hear that? "For this reason, for this purpose, I have raised you up to show you my power, so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth." God raised Pharaoh up. Now, please understand, we're gonna make this point in a few moments. Pharaoh retained his own volition. God did not make Pharaoh do anything. God even allows people to choose evil leaders. In Hosea 8, verse 4, "They made kings, but not through me. They set up princes, but I knew it not. With their silver and gold, they made idols for their own destruction." God, through the prophet Hosea, is talking about what the people did. They chose leaders God did not approve of. Leaders that led them astray, that led them away from God. He allowed them to choose evil leaders. They retained their volition. The leaders retained their power of choice. We also see in Acts chapter 13, verse 21 through verse 23, that God sometimes chooses righteous leaders. Talking about the time when Israel demanded a king. "Then they asked for a king, and God gave them Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. And when he had removed him," again, God is able to remove and to set up, "he raised up David to be their king, of whom he testified and said, I have found in David, the son of Jesse, a man after my heart who will do my will. God set up Saul. Saul had absolute control of his decisions in life. He chose to go astray. He chose to disobey God. When God gave him a very specific duty and responsibility, Saul disobeyed. And then he raised up David, through whom the promise would be fulfilled. Yes, God remains in control. And there is no doubt that in times past, He has chosen specifically some to rule. There's no doubt that God is able to work through whomever is in power. Whether it was Pharaoh, whether it was Saul, whether it was David, God is able to work through those men. And please understand something. Then this is critically important. There is no political leader today, nor has there ever been one, who can thwart the mind and the will of God. God's will is going to be accomplished. And we may not understand that. We may not see that. But God's will is going to be accomplished. And what I want you to understand is that when you look at politics, especially in government, there is a history of evil conducted by nations. When you look throughout the Bible, all of the different nations, in Genesis chapter 13 and verse 13, talks about the men of Sodom being wicked. And again, remember, they had a king. In fact, one of the kings that Abram went and rescued, that we talked about a few moments ago. But the men were wicked. And again, I think the implication is they had a king. The king was a part of that wickedness. In Genesis chapter 15, verse 16, God is speaking to Abraham and basically telling Abraham, you're going to have to wait a while for the land promise. And it was a while. But this is what he said about it. They shall come back here in the fourth generation, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. In other words, the Amorites were not evil enough, if you will, for God to destroy them and take their land from them. God knew what was going to take place. God knew that they were going to continue to rebel and to sin, and they were going to go further and further and further away. In chapter 18 of the book of Deuteronomy, in verse 9, when you come to the land that the Lord your God has given you, you shall not learn to follow the abominable practices of those nations, talking about the Amorites and others. By this time, when God was ready to give them the land, He says, you shall not follow the abominable practices of those nations. You think about Jeroboam in the book of 2 Kings chapter 17. Jeroboam had led Israel away from God by establishing two cities of worship in the northern kingdom. He set up his own priesthood. And we read there in verse 21, when he had torn Israel from the house of David, they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king, and Jeroboam drove Israel, now listen, from following the Lord and made them commit great sin. The people of Israel walked in all the sins that Jeroboam did. They did not depart from them. You know what happened to Israel? They were destroyed, utterly destroyed. They did not have a single king from the time of Jeroboam until the time of their destruction by Assyria. They did not have a single king good and righteous and God-fearing. They all led the people away. But we also look in chapter 21 and verse 9. But they did not listen. Again, talking about now here in chapter 21, the prophet, the revelation, is the fact that Judah did not pay attention to what happened to Israel. They did not listen. And Manasseh led them astray to do more evil than the nations had done whom the Lord destroyed before the people of Israel. In other words, Israel had gotten so bad they were worse than the ones destroyed. And so when you think about government and you think about nations, you think about a political system, understand that there's been a history of evil from the very beginning. And the reason I make this point is because we sometimes sit back and we think to ourselves, you know, this nation is going to pot. This nation is just continuing a decline. And then we begin to excuse ourselves. We begin to think to ourselves, well, you know, that gives me the right to say some things about the leaders of our country that maybe would not have been right at other times, because we are so depraved now as a nation of people. We publicly support gay and homosexual marriages. We publicly support abortion. We publicly support, and you can just go on with the list of things. I want you to remember also that there was a history of evil conduct in Jesus' time. You have Caiaphas, who was the high priest. And by the way, the high priest at this time was appointed by Rome, basically. According to Josephus, Caiaphas was appointed in AD 18 by the Roman prefect who preceded Pontius Pilate. And so the high priest of Israel, the spiritual leader, was appointed by Rome and was very political. In fact, if you look at verse 59 of Matthew chapter 26, the chief priests and the whole council were seeking false testimony against Jesus that they might put him to death. And so they were very political. They were a government, if you will, and they were an evil government. They were a government so low that they were looking for someone to tell lies about Jesus that would give them the right then to put Jesus to death. You think our government is any worse? In Matthew chapter 2, verse 13 through verse 16, we read about Herod the Great. About that time, Herod the king laid violent hands on some who belonged to the church. I'm sorry, I skipped here one. Let me go back to Matthew chapter 2. Like I said, I got out of line here. Let me go back to Matthew chapter 2, verse 13. Now, when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." You remember when the wise men came, Herod brought them before him, and he wanted to know about this child. He had heard the prophecies, and he'd heard things, and so he wanted to know, because he wanted to destroy the child. So Joseph did what he was told. He arose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, "Out of Egypt I call my son." Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all that region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men. You're talking about evil governing. You talk about evil politics. Who could possibly be any more evil than someone like Herod the Great? Of course, we think to ourselves, well, what about the millions of unborn children, babies. And we should think about that. And then Herod, in Luke chapter 23, verse 11. By the way, let me backtrack just a little bit. Herod the Great, according to secular history, died a terrible death just a very short time after the reading there in Matthew chapter 2. He contracted a terrible disease and died a terrible death. So we have another Herod here. This Herod was the son of Herod the Great. In Luke chapter 23 and verse 11. And Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. Then arraying him in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate, talking about Jesus. This was the same Herod that we read about in Acts chapter 12 verse 1. About that time, Herod the king laid violent hands on some who belonged to the church. He was the one who had James killed with the sword, probably beheaded. He was the one who had imprisoned Peter. He's also the one, later on in that chapter, who died a violent death because he did not give God glory. And then we read in Matthew chapter 27 and verse 24 about Pilate. When Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather that a riot was beginning, he took water, washed his hands before the crowd, saying, I am innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourselves. He had already declared that Jesus was innocent, that Jesus did nothing worthy of death. And yet, because of the pressure exerted on him, he was willing participant. He gave the right, the authority. Understand, Jesus could not have been put to death without this. Do you think that there was a history of evil conduct in Jesus' time? Yes, it was. I've gone to all of this to make a very simple point. A point that we're going to build on tonight. Yes, we live in a difficult time. And yes, much evil is taking place. And many who are a part of government, many who are involved in making law or judging law, do things that are contrary to God's will. Just as they did throughout history. Whatever we read about as far as a Christian's duty and responsibility to government and government officials, I wanted you to understand that the things were said in a time when government was just as evil as it is today. When religious leaders did not respect God just as they do not today. When government officials turned their back on God just as they've done today. I wanted you to understand that because when we begin to read the various duties and responsibilities that we as Christians have toward government and government officials, you'll understand that we don't live in a different time. And so what was said by Christ or what was said by Paul or what was said by one of the other inspired writers is just as applicable today as it was back then. We're not excused more than they were because we don't live in a time any different really than they did. And so we need to understand what God would have to do as Christians. Again, the Lord's church is not political in that sense. The Lord's church does not become involved in government and trying to put its stamp of approval on this or that politician. But as Christians, we have some very clear duties and responsibilities that we're going to look at tonight. If you're not a Christian, I pray that you will make your life right with God this morning. I pray that you will, if you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, that you will come forward, confess that faith, and be baptized. If you are a child of God, but you've sinned against Him, then I pray that you will ask God's forgiveness, that you will turn your life back to Him. If you need to respond, do so as together we stand and we sing the song.